Let me take you through the reporting on the Byron Buxton story. And now that everybody else has weighed in, I'll offer my opinion as well. Hey, this is a Block Commuted with Jim Suhan. I'm Jim Suhan. Our producer is Brandon Morton. He's the other voice you will hear. And then you'll hear from John Rosengren, our guest this week. He spent some time in Georgia reporting on Herschel Walker, Herschel Walker's popularity and his Senate run. He's likely to be the GOP nominee down there. And John is a great writer, great reporter who has done a lot of really cool stuff in baseball and Twin City sports. He's a St. John's guy living in South Minneapolis. He takes us through his reporting on Herschel. But let me tell you about what happened last Sunday. I go to the ballpark, and I knew that everybody was angry that Byron Buxton didn't pinch hit in a close game on Saturday night. I started asking around, okay, why wasn't he used? Is this the right decision? And I know a lot of people over there. I had a few people tell me, listen, they're not going to risk Byron Buxton's health for one at bat, even though he's their best player. You know, he needs full days off. He needs days where he can rehab and rest, and that's the way it's going to be. So I kept kind of having these conversations. And finally, you know, talking to some Twins people, we all kind of agreed that, you know, one of the things that went wrong with Joe Mauer's career, which might be a Hall of Fame career, by the way, with the Twins, was that there was always this vagueness and mystery about the way they communicated about Mauer's injury. Mauer didn't want to talk about it. He didn't want the team talking about it. And it kind of left this open space where people could fill in whatever their biases were about Joe Mauer. You could call him, you know, soft. You could call him a malingerer. You could say, you know, he didn't want to play, whatever. And those things weren't true, but there was nobody arguing against you from the Twins' perspective because they didn't want to get into it. And so, you know, after a long day of conversations going back and forth, I finally got a hold of Derek Falvey, the baseball boss. He said, yeah, it's patella tendonitis. It's bad. You know, it's painful. He needs to go through a lot of treatment on a daily basis. We have a plan, and the plan is to get him, you know, around 100 to 110 games, try to get Byron Buxton at his best for 100 and 110 games, have him not spend a lot of time on injured lists, also have him ready to go in September when he might be playing must-win games in October, because why make the playoffs if you can't have Byron Buxton available to you in the playoffs? He's their best player. They win when he plays. They don't win when he doesn't play. That's just the way it is. And what I find really interesting about this, Brandon, is that, you know, there are a lot of topics that we get into that everybody in sports talk and everybody in sports writing gets into, where you can say, you know, they're kind of 50-50 issues, or they're 60-40 issues. Or you say, okay, I see both sides, but I'm gonna land on this side. I'm not sure I understand the opposition to the idea that you're going to try to keep Byron Buxton healthy. You're going to try to keep him from blowing out his knee and missing the rest of the season. You're going to try to keep him from having one of those many seasons in which you can only play 40, 50, 60 games. I don't really get it. I don't get how, when you have a player who has that much pain in his leg and can't play every day, why you wouldn't come up with a plan that gives you the best chance of having him at his best as often as possible.
It just feels like they're bowing to the fans of wanting to see Buxton play all the time, play through pain, you know, old school tough guy baseball.
And that's the thing. But the reality is that there are a lot of old school tough guy baseball guys who had their careers ruined trying to play through injuries. Tony Oliva shouldn't have played on his leg. It ruined his career. He eventually got in the Hall of Fame, but he was a no doubt Hall of Famer until he hurt his knees. And then he limped around on them, probably played when he shouldn't have been playing, probably didn't get the right medical treatment for them. And it almost, you know, it did ruin his career. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer, but he would have been a top-tier first ballot Hall of Famer if he kept going that way. Kent Herbeck tried to play through injuries. He ended up retiring because he couldn't stay out of the injury room. You know, I don't know if the Twins handled Mauer correctly or not. I think they basically did. And I think his concussions ended up making him move to first base, and that was just unavoidable. But there's no mystery here. If they tried to play him every day, the knee would go. He'd be out. They would be without him, and they would miss the playoffs. This isn't like the best option. This is the only option. And when he comes in and says, and they've gotten to a point now where they have an honest relationship where he tells them when it hurts, which is another problem you deal with players who try to be too tough, is they'll tell you it doesn't hurt, then they'll go out and blow themselves out, and then they're lost. You know, they got to a point where they have good talks about his legs, and he knows that if he's going to stay healthy all season and be productive, that he shouldn't play on certain days when he walks in and he's having trouble. I mean, Byron Buxton with a bum leg is not Byron Buxton. They need him to be able to run fast. That's a big part of his game. It's what makes him special. So, listen, I don't think this is a debatable topic. I think they just have to follow the medical advice they're getting on how to use him. And the medical advice says, hey, he's going to need regular days off. That's just the way it is.
As someone who's constantly finding themselves injured or in accidents of sorts, take the medical advice.
Yes, I am in favor in this case of medical. I always go to the science, and this is basically scientific advice. Let's go with the science on this one.
Agreed. All right, well, let's move on to the Minnesota Lynx.
So the Lynx, we did the Cheryl Reeve show this week with Cheryl in Vegas, and I don't know that I've ever seen a Lynx team with this much upheaval, this many key roster moves. I mean, they basically tried about five or six different point guards in the first five games of the season. They started 0-4 for the second season in a row. And as I wrote in my season preview way back when, it's going to take them a while to figure it out, but they'll eventually figure it out. They kind of figured it out the last couple of games. They lost a close one to Chicago, mainly because they didn't shoot free throws well. Now they beat a good L.A. team in L.A., Kayla McBride being back is absolutely key. Mariah Jefferson, somebody Cheryl Reeve has always thought highly of but has had injuries. She's stabilized the point guard position. Guess what? I'll keep this one short. They're going to be a good team. It's been ugly. 0-4 start is not ideal. Now that McBride's back, now that they have a point guard they like, my guess is they're going to be a good team from here on out. And by the way, let me thank a couple sponsors here. Hey, on Saturday morning, we're going to do our preps show. Preps Today with John Millay is going to be live at the TCO, the new TCO in Brooklyn Park. It'll be the TCO Brooklyn Park grand opening event. Our podcast will be live there 11:30 to 12:30. Myself, John Millay. We think Randy Shaver's stopping by. We think we might. Oh, and Braden Carrington, the Gopher recruit from Park Center. He's going to be stopping by. He had great success with TCO, so it's going to be a blast. We're going to be in the physical therapy lobby. There's going to be all kinds of stuff going on all around us. We did one of these in Stillwater, I think, a year ago, and it was an absolute blast. There's food, there's drink. There are going to be Viking representatives, Viking cheerleaders. Just come on out. It'll be a lot of fun. And thank you also to TSR Injury Law, 612 TSR Time, been a great supporter of Talk North. And if you are injured, just remember 612 TSR Time. It's all you need to remember. They'll take good care of you. All right, on to our next team.
Moving on, we have the Minnesota Vikings.
Spent some time out at their rookie camp, which I'm always reminded when I go to one of these rookie camps or OTAs how little you learn going out there. But, you know, I mean, as much as anything, it's a good chance. Like, I talked to Jeff Diamond. Jeff Diamond does one of our football shows here, the former Vikings general manager. Mark Craig, Jeff Diamond, and I stood on the sideline and talked a little bit. And, you know, you don't get a lot out of those things, but you do get kind of a vibe. And sometimes you're reminded of things you might have forgotten. And I will say that as we were all standing there watching them go through drills and you know, no contact scrimmages, it just became very obvious that you look at the physical specimen Danielle Hunter is, and then you look at Za'Darius Smith, another physical specimen, and you look at a team that was very bad on defense last year. I think they're going to be a good offensive team. They were a good offensive team last year. They're going to want to try to find a way to elevate Kirk Cousins' play by 5, 10, 15%. Maybe that's possible, but there'll be a good offense even if he doesn't. They were a bad defense. If Danielle Hunter and Za'Darius Smith play the way they're capable of playing and stay healthy, then this could be a really good defense. And if this is a really good defense, it's almost bound to be a very good team.
Up next on our list, we have the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Fascinating to watch Pat Beverley go on TV this week. And basically, you know, and really what he's doing here is auditioning for a future broadcasting career, right? Or maybe he's just having some fun. But most of the people who do this, who go through the car wash, which is what they call the ESPN series of interviews on different platforms, you're kind of putting your foot in the door, saying, "Hey, when my playing career is done, I want you to remember me. I can be good at this. I can be one of your broadcasters or analysts or whatever." And I think Beverley is doing it all wrong. It's good that he's candid, but everything he says seems to be self-serving. He's not offering you his best objective view of the NBA. He's trying to settle some scores, and that might feel good to him, and it might be entertaining in the short term. It's not going to work out real well for him long term if broadcasting is what he really wants to do.
My thoughts exactly is once the shock value wears off and we're done laughing and stuff like that, what are his actual analytic talents that he has?
Right. And you know, don't tell us that you're the greatest and don't tell us that Chris Paul is horrible. And don't take advantage of this situation just to beat up on people you don't like. Show us you can actually analyze the game. And frankly, sitting across from J.J. Redick, who's fantastic at this, and he should take some notes.
J.J. Redick's the best. He's one of my favorite Twitter follows. Moving on, we have the Minnesota Gophers.
Yeah, so I wrote a piece about P.J. Fleck this week. And because even though, you know, P.J. can rub me the wrong way, I'm hearing Minnesota sports fans complain endlessly about postseason losses. Now they have a reason to do so because the Wolves and the Wild both lost in the first round. And, of course, we know what the Twins' history is, and we know what the Vikings' history is. And even the Lynx haven't been great in the postseason lately. And I just have to give credit to P.J. Fleck. He's won all three of his bowl games. He's beaten legitimate opponents in each case. The Outback Bowl against Auburn was one of the great highlights in the history of Gopher football. He's playing about 500 ball in conference play, which is far better than his predecessors. Now, some people will say, well, it's because you're in divisions. You don't have to play the big boys all the time. Yeah, I get it. But he's been competitive in the Big Ten. And so, you know, listen, whatever my view of his oratorical style is, he's doing the job. He's recruited well. He's won big games. He's gotten him to bowl games. It hasn't been perfect, but I have to give him credit. If you want to complain about Minnesota teams not winning postseason games, you really can't include the Gopher football team.
Not a college kid, haven't ever actually been on, but I will say it's probably pretty motivating for the younger kids to have a coach that's got their back, and that is that loud and audacious at times. It's not my thing. I'm a little bit older past that, but at least he's backing up his talk.
I don't even mind him doing things to attract the 18-year-old recruit. I understand that that is the game. Where he gets on the wrong side of me sometimes is when he makes it too much about himself. Hey, my culture, my culture, my culture. Well, give credit to the kids. The kids got to do it. The kids got to make the plays on the field. And I also thought when he first came in and tried to act like, you know, Clay's and Kill had left him absolutely nothing, even though they just won a bowl game, I thought that was wrong as well. As far as him just kind of devising a persona that appeals to 18-year-old recruits, well, that's part of the job.
We were eventually going to get there, the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah. I'm not sure exactly how disappointed we should be. They had a great regular season. They did not match up well with the Blues. The Blues' size and experience and grit ended up wearing them down. I still think it was a good season. And I think it was the most entertaining hockey we've seen, you know, other than the upset conference finals run back in 2004 or whatever it was, 2003, 2004, whenever that was. This was great. Kaprizov proved that he absolutely is a star. It's not a perfect team. They have work to do. They have to deal with salary cap issues because he's a Saprissian suitor. I'm just not as down on this team as a lot of people are. And I think fans did what fans are bound to do and what fans absolutely have every right to do, which is they got really excited about this regular season and they expected it to translate to the postseason. It just doesn't always work out that way. I'm not going to really bash this team. I really like the way they played in general.
Plus, we've got at least four more years of Kirill. So we've got hockey to watch for at
Enjoy
least four
it, man.
More years.
He's the best player they've ever had. He's the most entertaining player they've ever had.
Such a blast. All right, let's wrap things up with PGA Champ.
Yeah, so we're recording this on Wednesday afternoon. The PGA Championship is starting on Thursday. I'm really looking forward to it. I've covered a bunch of PGAs in my time. I love watching golf on TV. I'll just say this. Phil Mickelson is dead wrong about everything. And you know what? He wants to work with an authoritarian state that killed and diced up, and I mean that literally, diced up an American journalist just so he can make more money and have more control. That's anti-human. It's also anti-American because you know what? The PGA Tour is a really good American institution. And as Tiger Woods put it the other day, anybody who's any good makes more money than he could ever spend playing the PGA Tour. And if you're going to grow up in America playing golf, then your goal should be to win the Masters and to win the U.S. Open and to get a shot at the British and to win the PGA and to win the Players' Championship. We have the best golf in the world right here. And guess what? The PGA Tour is not run by authoritarian murderers. So I think Phil Mickelson is absolutely wrong. Greg Norman is embarrassingly wrong. And I was glad to hear Tiger Woods and some of the other players call those guys out this week. All right, now on to John Rosengren. Really cool interview coming up, at least I thought so. He did really good work reporting on Herschel Walker. We're going to have him back on to talk about some of his baseball books in the future. Hey, thanks for listening to Blocked and Muted. Thanks for listening to TalkNorth.com. As promised, today's guest, John Rosengren, who lives in Minneapolis. You still in Minneapolis, John?
I am, Southwest Minneapolis.
Southwest Minneapolis. You went to St. John, so you've kind of been everywhere, done everything. You've covered a number of fascinating topics, all of which are right up my alley. But today we do want to talk about the piece you did for the Washington Post about Herschel Walker. You and I talked about it while you were reporting on that, because I covered Herschel in Dallas and in Minnesota. And I felt really guilty. I couldn't give you a great Herschel Walker story. I was around him all the time, but he never really did anything that jumped out at me other than the stuff that, you know, that we're going to talk about next. But let's start here. And I want to talk about some of your other books as well. But the process of reporting on who Herschel Walker is today and what it was like being around him in Georgia, just take that in any direction you like. Just tell me what that was like.
First off, it was hard to get him because his press people have really kept anyone not associated with Fox or Breitbart or other friendly conservative media outlets away from Walker. And so they just rebuffed all my efforts to reach him. So I just went down to Georgia and knew he was scheduled to appear at an event and hung out and waited for him to show up. And when he did, I actually had the chance to meet him and talk to him. And he created a favorable first impression with a warm handshake, and he maintained steady eye contact. And he's got a demeanor now that's, you know, obviously he's on the campaign trail, but he's the kind of guy when you're talking to me, it seems like you're the only person in the room. And he is a charming fellow with sort of a quiet, unassuming charm. But that said, you know, as I listen to things he says on various policy issues and just this, the outrageous statements, I'm very troubled by, you know, what's going on inside Herschel Walker.
Yeah, as am I, because I thought he was a little goofy when I covered him, and I thought maybe he was odd. Now he sounds dangerous. You know, it sounds like he has, he's threatened the life of significant others. Sounds like he's capable of violence. You know, we talked about the time that he quote unquote fell asleep in his car in his garage in Minnesota, and we didn't know exactly what to make out of that. And you know, we're in this modern era where we are rightfully cautious about mental health issues, and it makes talking about this stuff very difficult. I mean, do we feel like he's mentally damaged and we should feel sorry for him, or should we be afraid of him because he's capable of something violent?
Well, he wrote a book, as you know, a memoir called Breaking Free, and it published in 2008. And in that, he talks about having dissociative identity disorder, which we used to call multiple personality disorder. And he says this is the reason for some of his behavior, which when he withdrew from people and would isolate socially, or when he was violent. And actually, in talking to you and others who knew him back in the Vikings and through the course of his career and afterward, it was very helpful because it helped me put together a picture of who he might really be. He claims, like I said, to have dissociative identity disorder, but everybody I talked to, you and others, you know, over two dozen people who knew him as media, who'd interacted with him, or as former teammates, coaches, neighbors, et cetera, said, nope, he was never saw that, the stuff he's describing. He seemed like the same guy, may have been, like you said, a little goofy, but didn't change from day to day. As I dug deeper, I realized the guy who diagnosed him with dissociative identity disorder is not a psychiatrist, not a psychologist, but a guy with a doctorate in counseling who also claims that he can tell if someone is gay or if they have sort of demons, as he calls them, by the color crayon they choose to color a picture of the brain. So, I mean, this guy is a quack. And so I don't think his diagnosis can be trusted. And as the former editor of the former politics editor of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution said to me, you know, it becomes a convenient excuse if you've pointed a gun at someone to say, oh, yeah, well, I was mentally ill. And I want to be compassionate to Walker if he is struggling with a mental illness. You know, I think he's done some good in trying to raise awareness about mental illness and encouraging people to get help. But I also don't want that to become a shield to protect him from being accountable for these attempts on his wife's life. His ex-wife, you know, claims that he pointed a gun at her, that he held a knife to her throat or a razor sharp, a straight edge razor to her throat. And then there are other women he was involved with who were, you know, reported him to the police because they feared for their lives because he'd threatened to hurt them or had actually, you know, been stalking them. And so, and even after his divorce with his wife, he several times said he was going to blow her fucking brains out. So, and in his book, he writes about going after a guy who had delivered a car late, and he was so angry, he said he wanted to blow the guy's brains out, and was fantasizing about the visceral satisfaction he'd feel in watching the guy's brain splatter. So, this is a person who has a violent past and is a troubling on that plane alone, but there are many, many other reasons, I think, to be concerned about Herschel Walker as a Senate candidate.
In a different era, I might feel foolish asking you if someone like this can win, but we just came off 4 years of somebody who talked about sexually assaulting women, who made fun of a disabled person at a rally, who was openly racist. So I have to ask, can he win?
Well, that's what is so troubling and frightening for the reason you mentioned. Yes, it's a distinct possibility. He and it's very likely he'll get the Republican nomination and in Georgia next week, and then he'll go up against Raphael Warnock, who's the incumbent senator, and they're running a pretty close in the polls. But what I as I ask in this article, you know, my question is this what we've come to now in American politics in the post-Trumpian era, that sort of anybody with enough celebrity sparkle can get elected, regardless of their views or lack of view positions on issues? I mean, Walker cannot articulate a clear strategy or explanation of a policy on anything. And so the guy is grossly unqualified, and yet he's, you know, won about 60% of the support of the Republicans in Georgia.
Yeah, and the quotes, I think, at the end of your article from a woman just basically saying, oh, you know, he's a good person. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that scares you, is that, you know, and that's also why certain candidates and certain parties want to discredit mainstream media, because then it allows followers to just blow off any negative press that comes about.
Exactly. That whole Trump's strategy of saying, labeling anything that he didn't like fake news did just that. Yeah. Allowed people to just discount anything negative or that they didn't like or want to believe about one of their candidates. So it's, And as I ask people, you know, does it bother you at Trump rallies? And a former high school classmate of his in Wrightsville, Georgia, I asked, you know, does it bother you, these reports of violence? And they said either no, they weren't aware, or but once they were made aware of them by me, they said, well, you know, I think he's still a good person. And it's like kind of jaw dropping, mind boggling, that the lack of critical thinking and scrutiny of those supporters.
No doubt. Hey, you can find John's work his books, his background at johnrosengren.net. That's JohnRosengren. And he's written about some great stuff. John, I want to have you on another time to talk about your baseball book, Ezra Tuola. I always screw up his last name, Tuola, who's just a great guy. You know, you've done stuff on Marichal and Roseboro, which is a fascinating point of baseball history. Hank Greenberg. There's a lot of stuff I want to get to. We're gonna concentrate on Herschel today. In the process of reporting about him, did you find out anything you didn't know before or that really surprised you?
I think it was the lack of his inability to think critically and to examine issues, and also just his casual relationship with the truth. I mean, he used to claim he did 5,000 sit-ups and 5,000 push-ups a night as a kid in between episodes of various sitcoms like Happy Days and Laverne and Shirley. But if you think about that, if he's doing like a sit-up or a push-up a second, you know, there's 8 minutes between of commercials in a half hour segment. You do the math and it's like he would have had to be up three nights to fit in all those or whatever it was. But, and so anyway, he also, you know, claims to have graduated from the University of Georgia. He hasn't. He claimed to be the valedictorian of his high school class. He wasn't. But then he says things like, you know, evolution, if evolution is true, why are there still apes around? And, you know, it's just like, he just doesn't understand. Or when he does talk about policy, he says things like, you know, he questions why we're planting trees with the infrastructure bill, but he doesn't realize that that's to help combat climate change and to help provide cleaner air in low income neighborhoods. So on and on and on. It just, I think probably the biggest surprise is that after looking at this guy and how woefully unqualified he is, and unfit he is to serve, the fact that he's still running so high in the polls.
Yeah, it's just scary. I've also, in the times I've seen him interviewed in national media or clips that have gone national, he'll be asked about an issue and he will not understand. He won't understand the question. He'll have zero knowledge of the topic.
Exactly. And he made a big bumble on one program when he was asked about the infrastructure bill. And he said, well, we don't have the facts yet. Well, the bill had already passed. It was already law. And then another time he was asked about Representative John Lewis and the Voting Rights Act. And he referred to Senator Lewis and said it's dishonoring his memory to attach his name to this bill. Well, that's what Lewis stood for. And, you know, as a black man who grew up in the Deep South, you would think Walker would know these things, you know, these basic elements of history. But again, no. So, you know, I don't know how he'd be able to wrap his mind around, other bills that would come before him and he'd need to vote on.
I know he couldn't figure out Jerry Burns' offense.
Yeah, although that's, to be fair, I lived through that as a Viking fan. I was disappointed in Walker's performance. But, I think Burns didn't want the trade. I think you've even explained this to me.
Yep.
Burns didn't want the trade. He never adapted his offense to play to Walker's strengths. And so Walker was sort of doomed to fail and could never have met these unrealistic expectations Mike Lynn said.
No, that is absolutely true. And it wasn't just Herschel's fault. Herschel didn't really adapt, but they didn't really put him in. Yeah, I mean, that was classic miscommunication. I do a podcast with Jeff Diamond. And he's talked about it, too. Mike Lynn really never asked Jerry Burns if he wanted Herschel Walker. Mike just played fantasy football, thought, oh, add a running back to this offense will be great. He didn't realize that Jerry needs a certain kind of back. He needs a Chuck Foreman kind of back. Herschel was a straight ahead runner who needed, a hole to use his speed. And the other thing was, Herschel always took a lot of hits because he didn't really evade contact. By the time he got to Minnesota, he really didn't want to get hit anymore. And he, if you remember, he ended up, like if it was a short yardage situation or if there wasn't a hole there, he would turn his back and just kind of gently push. He wouldn't even try to make a move.
Right. And actually, you asked about surprises. One I did learn was, you probably remember the Sugar Bowl game in 19 it was the 1980 season, but January 1st, 1981, the Georgia Bulldogs against the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, and Walker got hurt early in the game, separated his shoulder, came out, they reset it on the sidelines, and he went back in, carried the ball 30 more times, rushed for 150 yards, two touchdowns. They, the MVP of the game, finishes off the Bulldogs' undefeated season and is MVP of the game. So this amazing performance. But what I learned was his one of his high school coaches told me he'd separated that same shoulder back in high school, but they kept it quiet. Only his doctor's mother and his coach knew. Because, of course, if word got out that he had a bum shoulder, his stock would go down and he might not – he'd been the most widely recruited running back in the nation that fall and winter. And so he wouldn't have been able to go as high as he did. So anyway, they kept that secret. So that was one of the nuggets I learned. And, that probably resulted in the – or that shoulder was damaged and continued to get damaged for years. So by the time he got to Minnesota, he was doing what you were saying of turning his back or running out of bounds.
Yeah. It's funny too, because when I covered Herschel, I stayed in touch with his agent, Peter Johnson out of Cleveland, because Johnson also had Rich Gannon and Peter was doing his job protecting Herschel, and he would call me, or he would kind of let me know, hey, here's Herschel's version of this. But Herschel himself almost seemed like he wanted to be above it all, and he wanted to be aloof. He wanted to be this godlike figure who didn't have to explain himself.
Right. And I think till that point, he had been revered.
Yes.
In Georgia and then in Dallas, he was, and even the USFL, certainly in high school, he was just this god who could do these amazing things. And he was an amazing running back and also kick returner, punt returner, fun guy to watch on the football field. But that ended in Minnesota.
Yes. I'm hoping your next book will be on like Phil Mickelson and golfers willing to sell out to the Saudis.
I'm sorry it won't be. I'm not a good fan of golf.
What are you working on? What's coming next?
Well, I have this book, Classic Baseball, that just came out, a collection of my baseball articles. So I've been promoting that. I just was up in Alaska reporting on the Iditarod and profiled Dallas Seavey, who's won the Iditarod 5 times. And so that's an article I'm doing for GQ. Should be out soon. And then I'm, various other articles as well.
Cool. Well, let's have you back on, on a month or two or whenever is convenient for you. And let's talk about your baseball book. Great summer to talk baseball. I'm also have always been fascinated by the Marichal Roseboro thing and Hank Greenberg's one of the great figures in the history of the game. So I'd love to get into all that as well. By the way, I know a little bit of your background, but I don't know you well, obviously. Did you grow up in this area?
Yes, I went to Wayzata High School and then, as you mentioned, St. John's University undergrad and Boston University grad school, but found my way back here after living in various other places.
Cool. Well, I've moved around a lot as well, and I'm glad to be back. I'm glad to be living in Minnesota. It's like I've never lived any place else more than like, I don't know, maybe 5 years. And now I'm entering my 32nd or 33rd year in Minnesota. So the place lures us in whether we want it to or not.
Yeah, you're almost one of us now.
Almost. I think another 50 years and I get my unlaminated paper ID as a partial Minnesotan.
Right. We'll start telling you the secrets in about 20 years.
I mean, I just can't wait. I know. And you'll tell me secrets, but as you know, Glenn Mason's greatest contribution to Minnesota sports was the line, a Minnesotan will, what do you say? A Minnesotan will give you. Oh, man, I just blew it. This is horrible. Brandon's got to do some heavy editing here. I forgot the beginning of his line. But basically his line, I'm not going to get it exactly right, but the sentiment was a Minnesotan will give you everything except directions to their house.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. Glenn actually got one right there. So once again, John Rosengren, JohnRosengren.net. I recommend Googling and checking out the Washington Post article he did on Herschel Walker, really in-depth research and fascinating and scary look at what's happening in Georgia. Go to his website and check out all the other cool stuff. And we'll be talking to John about baseball here soon. Hey, John, thanks a lot. It was good talking to you.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks so much for having me on. Always good to talk to you.
Great. We'll talk soon.